I'm Neil from the Starling Tribune, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the one you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual host. Check out all the other great podcasts at GunnaGeek.com and get ready because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, step out of your TARDIS and warm up your chimichangas, because this is PopX Cast.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
And welcome, everyone. This is PopX Cast coming to you live on this Sunday night, April the 2nd, 2017. And joining me here, we have Team PopX.
Hey, oh,
what's going on? Oh, my God. Austin Burke's back and Badges is rocking the Deadpool shirt. Look at that Deadpool shirt.
Yeah. Oh, man. That is snazzy. I like that.
That is snazzy. That is very snazzy. Our friend Mike Ippolito couldn't be with us tonight. He is getting ready to travel out to the desert, as he likes to call it, quote unquote. So I think that him and Heisenberg may have a deal that they're going to be trying to lock in. So hopefully, you know, I heard Saul Goodman was called in on it as well.
Oh, man.
So, yeah.
Shady stuff's going down over
he
there.
He said it was a deal he couldn't refuse.
Mike is the one who knocks.
He is the one who knocks. Oh, my gosh. It's been 2 weeks since we've been live. Team PopX, how are you all doing tonight? What's going on? What's new?
Little hoarse today, Joe. Little hoarse.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm here. I'm ready to go. Voice is going to be deeper, but that just makes for a better experience.
Mm. Oh.
Sultry. Oh.
Sultry voice. Yes. Yes. Lindsay Badger, what's new in your life?
Not much. Went to a baby shower today.
Really?
Very exciting. Ooh.
Did you use Johnson & Johnson's baby lotion for the baby shower?
Well, maybe just the lavender. It's the lavender.
That was lavender. A really bad joke, wasn't it? Oh my gosh. So we'd like to welcome everybody watching us live right now on PopX.live and Geeks.live. And let's just dive right into it, shall we, Team PopX?
Sure.
Welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live right now on PopX.live and Geeks.live chat room. Come hang out with us and join the conversation at popxcast.com.
And I am Austin Burke, the Appalachian Geek at Heart. If you missed episode 52, where these two, not me, I wasn't there, they reviewed Kong Skull Island, please check out our official website at popxcast.com for this and other great past shows from PopX.
Indeed.
That's right. And I'm Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky okey. Be sure to head over to Google Play or iTunes after the show and click that subscribe button. Catch up on some amazing shows from PopX Archive. And hey, while you're there, we'd certainly appreciate showing some geeky love and leaving us a 5-star rating and review.
Yes, and thank you, Miss Lindsay Badger. And with all of that said and out of the way, let's go ahead and roll that beautiful bean footage of the PopX News. We'll be right back.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live, right here, on PopXcast.com.
You know, it's just not the same when Mike's not here, is it?
I know.
It's just not the same. There's a certain... Je ne sais quoi, as you would say. You like that, didn't you? I don't know. It's a hillbilly trying to say French.
I just like when you speak French.
It's like, Mike, you complete me.
You complete us, Mike.
Let's all throw it up for Mike. Come on, let's throw it up for Mike right now. There it is. Look at that.
Oh, I love you.
All right, anyway, moving along with the news here. I'm going to be doing the slides this week, so I will try my best. So just bear with me if I'm a little slow. But a month ago, Marvel sent its comics fans into a flurry of speculation when it dropped a teaser dubbed, quote-unquote, Generations, hinting that the original legacy characters like Tony Stark, Jean Grey, and Captain Marvel, could be coming back alongside heroes that have taken on their mantles. Well, now they have just confirmed exactly what's happening. It sounds like it represents some huge changes for the Marvel Universe going forward. All those classic versions of heroes, even the dead ones like Jean Grey and Bruce Banner, they're all back. And this is really crazy. And it's not an alternate universe.
Look at that.
Or a time travel.
That's awesome.
Generations will be a 10-part series running between July and September that pairs a current hero with their legacy incarnation.
Wow.
Some of these will be easy to do, like Clint Barton and Kate Bishop, or Peter Parker and Miles Morales. Mm-hmm. Some like Carol Danvers and Marvel, well, or young Carol and Kamala Khan, will require some comic book backstory and some magic shenanigans. But according to the Marvel Universe, these are pretty much absolutely canonical tales in so far as a comic book universe can go. The list of pairings for each story in Generations 10 run issues are Iron Man, Tony Stark, and Riri Williams, with Spider-Man, Peter Parker, and Miles Morales combined. Miss Marvel, that'd be Carol Danvers and Kamala Khan. Thor, that'd be Odinson and Jane Foster. Hawkeye, that'd be Clint Barton and Kate Bishop. Hulk, Bruce Banner, and Amadeus Cho. Jean Grey, that will be younger and older Jean Grey. Wolverine, Logan, and X-23. And Captain Marvel, Mar-Vell, and Carol Danvers. And, of course, Captain America, Steve Rogers, and Sam Wilson, better known as the Falcon.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about this change coming? It kind of sounds like they have a lot of storylines out there, a lot of multiple universes, a lot of things going on, and this is Marvel's effort to try to combine everything into one compact universe. Do you think it's a good change, Austin?
It's something that could go either way, honestly, because if they don't do it right, if they make one misstep, it could turn people off from the universe, and that's a scary thing. But I like the fact that they're taking the risk, and I'm really excited to see all of these heroes and the relationships and everything that's going to happen in this series. And even just seeing that artwork is amazing, and it's beautiful.
Yeah,
so this is something
rocks.
It's so cool. Like, I would put that as my desktop background right now if I could. So I can't wait to see what they do with this, and I can't wait to see Marvel take this risk.
Yeah. Lindsay Badger, what is your commentary on it?
I like it because they are they're bringing a few names that are not nearly as prominent, and they're matching them up with some names that are familiar. For example, Bruce Banner versus Amadeus Cho. I know Bruce, but I don't really know the other one as much. And you know, that may just be me not being as familiar with comics, but you're going to be having some people interested in these just by those big names, and they're going to be learning about those new names from, you know, and carrying on the torch a little bit to the next generation of comic book readers. So I dig it.
All right. So here's the thing. Here's my beef with the whole thing. They purposely ended all of the extended runs of some of the longest running comic books in history of Marvel, including The Incredible Hulk, The Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, no.
They ended those runs when they did The Secret Wars, if you remember. And that's when they started coming out with the new Wolverine, the new Thor.
That's right.
And I kind of feel like, they should pick up with the number they left off with and continue the series.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm just saying, don't start over with the number one and force fans to have to buy a number one book again. That would be crap.
I completely agree with that, Joe.
Yeah. They should just carry it on. But, different changes, matchups, I think is cool. But they don't have to start over.
For sure.
That's my two cents, so that's where I'm leaving it.
It's annoying to keep up with all that, people.
Austin, what do you have for us this week?
Well, moving on in the news, we're going from Marvel to DC. So Warner Brothers and DC continue to expand their film universe, featuring one of DC's most popular characters, Barbara Gordon, otherwise known as Batgirl, or sometimes Oracle. The studio is close to a deal with fan favorite, listen to this, Joss Whedon to direct, but he would also be writing and producing as part of the finished deal. So Toby Emmerich, John Berg, and Jeff Johns are attached, but no one knows anything regarding the casting of the lead role. or when production will begin. This is a rather recent development, so the character won't likely show up in Justice League. So what do you guys think of the former Avengers director taking on Batgirl?
Oh, man. I don't know how I feel about these.
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about these side role movies. Like, we heard this past week, we may be talking about it later, about Venom. And, you know, Sony is wanting to spark that. And there's rumors and speculations going on about Tom Holland actually returning back to Sony and leaving the MCU. Ugh. So I'm feeling like this might be like a one and done type movie where we only get to see Batgirl in one flick. And it
I think it's going to be like the next Catwoman.
Could be. Hopefully not. Hopefully they've learned from that mistake and moved on.
Oh, my goodness.
Joss has been wanting to do – I know he was attached to Wonder Woman for a while.
Right.
So he's had his eye on a DC female character. And seeing what he did with you know, the Buffy and of course, what he did with, like, Firefly and all this, like, he's good. He knows what he's doing with the female character in the lead role. So I trust what he's going to do with Batgirl. It's kind of like what they're doing with Nightwing, too.
Right.
They had their plan A that didn't work. Now they're doing plan D with all these side characters getting their own movies. So we just got to see how Justice League turns out.
You know? For what it's worth, I know she's not included in the Justice League, but we haven't seen Batgirl since Alicia Silverstone back in the 90s.
Ooh,
so it's nice to see her real surface again and kind of be a refresh of that character. Hopefully,
good pull, Lindsay Badger. Good pull. Yeah,
absolutely.
All right.
I know my bat.
I know.
No, I'm done.
So, Lindsay, what's news in your way?
All right, so we're gonna continue down the DC road a little bit here with virtual reality is the next big phase in technology, and now IMAX and Warner Brothers are partnering together to bring forth the ultimate virtual reality experience for fans in the DC extended universe. As part of the agreement between the two entertainment powerhouses, three interactive virtual reality experiences will be developed based on three upcoming DC blockbusters.
Cool.
The company's plan is to release one experience per year over the next 3 years, beginning later this year with Justice League, before moving into Aquaman, which is next year. And the third project has yet to be named. This type of premium content will introduce audiences to a virtual reality in standalone and multiplex-based IMAX VR centers, as well as other platforms. IMAX launched its flagship VR center in Los Angeles earlier this year, and the company plans on opening 5 additional locations in New York City, California, the United Kingdom, and Shanghai as the year progresses.
Wow.
Interesting.
That's fun new toys to play with.
IMAX.
Don't you think it's a little funny that IMAX VR is on the cusp of the new Avatar films coming out?
Oh, you know James Cameron is preparing for that.
You know what? This is blowing my mind because I thought that virtual reality was just going to be a fad. Like, you know,
a lot of people did.
The iToy on PlayStation 2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of stuff.
iToy.
You know, kind of throw it back a little bit.
I like that.
But it's sticking around.
It's sticking.
It's sticking really good. People are all about it. It's crazy.
So I think honestly though, with these new flagship films like Aquaman, like you said, and stuff like that, I think it's going to be kind of a launching platform for films like James Cameron's Avatar, because we always know that when James Cameron launches a film, he always uses the latest technology.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Whatever.
He's
a huge techie, and it makes sense. Could you imagine sitting in a theater in an IMAX, surrounded in a 7.1, I don't know what kind of crazy sound system they use, but you're looking around the entire world of Avatar and the entire planet.
Mm.
The whole screen, the whole thing is an entire 3D canvas. That's insane.
Yeah. So in a VR center, wouldn't you be like, everyone has a headset on and so everybody is looking around? So what's the point of having the big screen?
Maybe the goggles mimic IMAX.
Okay.
Projection.
Because the whole exciting part of the VR is that you get to control where the camera looks. And I don't, I don't know. I mean, IMAX is kind of set up that way already with the big surround screen, and you kind of have that essence, but you're going as a group. Everyone in your theater is part of that. But the exciting part is I have no idea. I want to see how this works. I want to know more.
I do too. And so I guess time will tell as we see IMAX VR coming to markets pretty soon. And hopefully some films and major cinema productions coming to that as well. Yep. It's an exciting time to be a part of in the film business and be a part of such. It's really cool. But moving along with the news this week, with production currently underway in Atlanta, the CW has released a first look at Cress Williams as Black Lightning.
Yes.
The latest DC Comics character to get his own TV series produced by Greg Berlanti. The costume of Black Lightning incorporates elements of the classic comic book look along with the leather and armor aesthetic common to the CW's DC Universe shows and his high-tech elements that appear to be microcircuitry of Batman Beyond. Look at that. That is just awesome. This is the first African-American DC superhero to have his own standalone comic book title, and Black Lightning is based on the character created by Tony Isabella with Trevor Von Eden in 1977. Kind of coincidence, Power Man came out around that time as well in Marvel. But anyway, moving on, Jefferson Pierce made his choice. He hung up the suit and his secret identity years ago. But with one daughter hell-bent on justice and another on star student being recruited by a local gang, he's pulled back the suit to fight as the wanted vigilante and the DC legend, the Black Lightning. So it sounds like his children has made some bad choices and has been motivated.
So just a quick synopsis. What does Black Lightning do? What is his thing?
Well, it's exactly like his name. He can summon energy. He's an energy guy. Yeah,
gotcha.
Yeah. He can,
because his suit kind of makes him look like a speedster.
Kinda, yeah. If you think of the Lightning, but, I would think. Yeah. How would you describe Black Lightning? Because he's definitely one of those racial heavy. Profile absolutely. Guys.
It's going to be like DC's Luke. Luke Cage was tomorrow. They have Black Lightning. And other than thinking of Jordan Peele from Key and Peele when I see that picture, I think the costume is awesome. I love that costume. It is so cool, and I can't wait to see that on the small screen. So I'm excited for this series.
So he's kind of like Zeus throws thunderbolts.
A little bit. Think kind of like what Static Shock is as well. If you think of how Static Shock's powers work, his are very similar.
Nice.
All right.
I'm excited.
Well, bring on
the lightning.
That's right, awesome.
Austin Burke, bring on some more lightning for us.
All right. So at CinemaCon 2017 in Las Vegas, Walt Disney Pictures revealed its upcoming schedule of releases from 2017 through 2019. The schedule includes several new films from Disney's biggest franchise series and studios. These include new films from Disney with a live-action Mulan and a remake of Mary Poppins, along with superhero stories from Marvel Studios that include Black Panther, Ant-Man and the Wasp, and Captain Marvel, cosmic adventures from Lucasfilm's Star Wars franchise with the most anticipated Star Wars film maybe ever, The Last Jedi, and the standalone Star Wars story Han Solo. From Pixar, titles include Cars 3, Coco, Wreck-It Ralph 2, sweet, and, wait for it guys, The Incredibles 2. Man,
you guys know that the official name for Wreck-It Ralph 2 is Ralph Breaks the Internet.
That is so cool. That is awesome.
Ralph Breaks the Internet.
And did you notice the logo to that movie kind of resembles the YouTube logo on your phone? That is so smart. I love that. Oh man, look at these guys. I mean, Disney, they rule the movie industry right now.
That is a glorious timeline. I'm just going to tell you right now.
It's hard to compete with Walt Disney Studios. I'm telling you.
Absolutely. With anything, especially movies, because that's just, that is incredible.
I'm excited. All right. I'm excited.
Yeah. You want to hear some more marvelous news?
I see what you did there, Badger. I see what you did there.
Marvel can place another feather in its cap as Doctor Strange finished its run at the box office, garnering some massive bucks for their first big screen adventure of the Sorcerer Supreme. Scott Derrickson and Benedict Cumberbatch's first Marvel Studios collaboration earned 232.6 million in its domestic run.
Million.
Contributing to its $677 million worldwide haul. The numbers also prove that Marvel Magic is still going strong as they take relatively unknown properties and turn them into potential franchises. Doctor Strange's budget was $165 million, and productions typically have to double that in earnings in order to turn a profit due to distribution and marketing costs tacked on to the total. The fact that Doctor Strange greatly exceeded those numbers before home release is certainly a success for both Disney and Marvel.
Can you say
that was an excellent movie?
Keywords there, before home release. So you've got all that money.
And then it's just going to keep on giving. Well earned as well. If you haven't seen this movie, you need to, because it's the best. It's
give your money.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think that Doctor Strange, honestly, is definitely one of those underdog films, kind of like Ant-Man was.
Yes.
We didn't really know what Ant-Man was going to be or how we were going to take to it. Turned out being one of the best Marvel films ever.
And it made a lot of money.
And I think, honestly, that's where Doctor Strange falls in. I think Doctor Strange is just definitely going to be one of the front runners. And it's just mind-bending. The visual effects, I don't know why in the world it didn't win some crazy awards.
I see what you did there with the mind-bending there.
Yes. Before we head on to this week's topic, which is Super Sentai and Power Rangers, I want to share with you guys some things that's going on in the Marvel Universe for the spring summer season before we get into the whole Marvel rebirth, revamp, combined, I don't know, generational thing.
New thing.
So, yes, interesting. It's really interesting. But Marvel is getting ready to rebirth their entire X-Men franchise, which for some time has kind of needed a whole reboot. And I think, honestly, I'm just going to let the picture speak for its words, speak for itself. We have Old Man Logan, Jean Grey, Storm, Colossus, Nightcrawler, and I believe in the back there that is, I'm not sure who that is in the back. Maybe it's Captain Marvel. But they're getting ready to revamp the entire X-Men franchise. And yes, Old Man Logan, according to this, is not dead.
He's back.
He's back. So maybe with this generation thing that they're doing, they revived Logan as we speak. So also with this, they're going to be going back in time to the 50s, to the humble X-Men Blue origins.
Yeah.
So they're doing quite a bit of cool things along the lines. And they're actually going to be right now, if you go ahead and go to your local comic book shop, they're going to be having an amazing event coming up this spring, summer, where the X-Men square off against the Inhumans. And they have said some will live, some will die. And it's definitely one that you want to check out and one you want to read. Also, one I wanted to mention out, and we did a podcast on this, Cable is getting his own comic. Yes. So we know that as Scott Summer and Jean Grey's future child. Some really cool things to get excited for at your local comic book shop. Go to your comic book shop, start a subscription that helps comic book owners, the comic book shop owners know that they've got subscriptions and that they can stay in business. And X-Men versus Inhumans, that's going to be a really great saga. And then we're going to have the whole rebirth saga of the Marvel Universe as we know it. So it's going to be really awesome. And that's going to be in July through September. So right now, we're going to be kicking off the X-Men and Inhumans thing.
Free comic book day is coming up soon, isn't it?
May the 5th, right?
May 5th. That's like
nice.
That's like just over a month away.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Let's get some free comics.
We have to get Austin to a comic book shop for comic book day.
I'll find one.
My gosh.
I'll travel. I might go to Lexington for it, honestly.
You want to get there early, Austin.
Okay.
Don't go before 11.
Okay. Ooh.
It's like one of my favorite holidays now.
Yeah, but if you get there early enough, you can secure yourself some awesome number one issue comics, it will actually be a nice launching platform into the spring summer season.
Yes,
and a lot of those are going to be volume zeros. Cool. You heard me right. Marvel is now doing a volume zero before their volume number one. So check That's it awesome. Out. Okay. So, wow, guys, are we ready to dive in to this week's? Okay. You know what? Just before we do that, we're going to actually drop the spoiler alert. All right. Because we're going to be talking about the film And we're going to be talking towards the end of it. We're going to be talking about the new Power Rangers film, giving our take, giving our rating, giving our what we liked, what we didn't like. Right. So you can hear this first part of the history origin story.
Stick around for the history, but we're gonna throw down on some movie towards the end.
All right, we'll be right back. Don't go nowhere.
You are about to enter a Pop-Pop-Pop-X spoiler alert. Beyond this point, there is no return. You have been warned.
All right. You have been warned, ladies and gentlemen. So we're actually going to be diving in now to the wonderful world of Super Sentai. Now, you may be asking yourself, what the bloody heck is a Super Sentai? Okay. Well, Super Sentai is actually the precursor to what we now see and know as the modern-day Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. And so we're going to give you some history. Now, it's not going to be, I want to say this up front, this is not an exact verbatim timeline of the past 45 plus years of Super Sentai folklore. We're going to actually be talking about some of the front runner episodes, some of the front runner shows that are in tune and in line with the Power Rangers saga, that these shows helped develop the saga to be what it is today. And we're going to be talking about some of these really cool figures from Power Rangers history and saga. So let's dive right into it, shall we, Team Pop-X?
Right,
let's do it.
All right, so the history of the Power Rangers in the United States begins on August 28th, 1993, as the TV pilot aired Saturday mornings on Fox Networks. The pilot was called Day of the Dumpster. Boy, that's Did they set themselves up for fail at the very beginning? If it sucks, it's going in the dumpster. I don't know. But the history of the Power Rangers doesn't necessarily start right here in America, but rather in Japan. The name that you need to know is Shotaro Ishinomori. And he is pretty, well, let's just say, let's back up. Can we just dwell for a second on those 93 Power Rangers?
Oh, it's like the full house of Sentai.
It's
so cute.
Yes, it is cute. But here's the individual that you guys need to know, Shotaro Ishinomori. And so Shotaro began drawing and writing manga compilations at a very early age. But in 1955, Ishinomori published his first solo manga called Angel Second Class. And that is that right there. And so he began his work basically in manga and the pop culture of Japanese history, based around that whole movement back in that day. And in 1963, Ishinomori hit his stride when he created the popular Japanese pop culture manga Cyborg 009. And that artwork, though.
That's sweet. Oh, yeah.
Now, you got to remember, this is 1963 artwork. It looks like today.
Wow.
That's how ahead of his time he was. So,
how much you want to bet that the name Angel Grove was a throwback?
Ooh.
Angel Second Class.
You know what? Man. That's a really good pull, Lindsay Badger.
Yeah. That's great.
For anyone that doesn't know the Angel Grove reference, that is the town the Power Rangers go to school in and grow up in and they get destroyed all the time. Yes.
Wow. That is
so let's dive on in here. So the same year he also established an animation production studio with his colleague Shinichi Suzuki called Studio Zero. And so he moved on to the next 009 with that. And so Cyborg 009 is a story about nine individuals who are kidnapped by the evil Black Ghost organization and transformed into cyborgs. Sound familiar? Well, it should. This change grants superhuman abilities. Together, they battle the Black Ghost organization to destroy them. Cool. It was so popular that it would be adapted to several animated series and movies. The template of the team, get it? The template of this team, yes, with superpowers, battling an evil organization would translate into many of his future works. This would lead to one of his most famous creations in 1971, Kamen Rider. And there is the Kamen Rider, which featured live-action fighting and storylines. Pretty interesting. So the word henshin,
that helmet, though.
I know. Yeah, and look at the bite.
It was like The Fly.
So the word henshin actually was also coined by Ishinomori, and henshin basically is a Japanese word which means to change appearance or to alter one's physical state. And so henshin is Japanese for that as well. With the way they now have paved the storyline of the team and enemies and all this, Ishinomori would combine elements of Cyborg 009 and Kamen Rider to create the first ever Super Sentai group, Himitsu Sentai Go Ranger, or translated.
Gee, those don't look familiar.
Yes, or translated Secret Squadron 5 Ranger.
Wow.
So, very interesting. Some very interesting stuff there.
Those costumes are pretty sweet.
Yeah, those costumes are pretty cool. Yeah, those costumes are pretty awesome, right?
So, Himitsu Sentai Go Ranger focused on 5 human characters, all donning different colored masks and suits, once again, sounds familiar, and eventually took the time slot for the Kamen Rider on April 5th, 1975. With their bright colors of red, blue, green, pink, and yellow, the Super Team became an overnight hit on Japanese television with 84 full episodes. Each Sentai has their own unique interlocking key, which grants them access to a secret headquarters where they can don their colorful suits and fight the evil dark army. Merchandise and ratings were through the roof, obviously, if you can't just look at those suits, man, that's marketable, and was even dubbed internationally into other languages. So the toy television company in charge of the Sentai shows were approached by none other than Marvel Entertainment for a 3-year agreement. Both parties could use each other's properties as they saw fit. Arriving 1 year after the U.S. TV series debuted, Japan's version of Spider-Man was drastically different. Takuya Yamashiro is a biker who hears a voice calling him from a distant land and doesn't realize the same voice has been calling out for centuries to a very powerful spaceship known as the Marveler. So Yamashiro's grandfather is an archaeologist who sets out to find where the Marvelers crashed on Earth. But the evil Professor Monster has set out to destroy the Marveler before it's found so he can rule the galaxy as supreme. This does not sound like Spider-Man. So Takuya is wounded in a confrontation with the Professor's minions, not those minions, and stumbles upon a cave where he finds the voice that has been calling out to him, Garia. To save Takuya's life, Garia gives him the spider bracelet, which injects Takuya with the spider extract and heals his wounds and grants him the ability to summon the Marveler. Spider-Man had familiar abilities and the outfit as his American counterpart, but would battle monsters that would grow, listen to this, to enormous sizes as the battles would escalate. This is where the Marveler would become essential and would transform into a giant fighting robot. The giant robot would be a huge leap forward in the future of the Super Sentai and later the Power Rangers.
Oh my goodness.
It's all coming. Oh yeah.
Wow.
All right. So the Japanese Spider-Man would prove to be crucial in the future of the Super Sentai. Based on the success of Spider-Man, Marvel and Toy decided that they would try a new team based loosely on Captain America, and the end result would be Battle Fever J. In this series, a secret society of egos, EGOS, wants to see the world in chaos. But a group of 4 young heroes would train with a member of the FBI, making the 5. With some groovy dancing, each member were given super suits, Battle Japan, Battle Cossack, Battle France, Battle Kenya, and Miss America. Based on the Marvel character of the same name.
Look at those suits.
Oh my goodness.
Those are fancy.
That is so awkward.
This team, like its predecessors, had a base and endless gadgets and vehicles and weapons, including a giant robot called Battle Fever Robo, which did not combine or transform. The following year, Toy released its 3rd Sentai series under the Marvel copyright, Denshi Sentai Dezimon. In this version, humanity finds itself threatened by aliens of another dimension. The Vader clan laid waste to the planet Denzai Star 3,000 years ago. Miraculously, Denzai Land, an island from the Denzai star, makes its way to Earth. The evil Vader clan, led by Queen Hedrian, finally reached Earth, which activates Denzai Land's cybernetic Denzai Dog, a robotic canine tasked with finding five people who are descendants of the Denzai. They were given five rings, which grant them powers and the ability to transform into humanity's defenders. Here we see the first portable transforming device of the ring, the first transforming giant robot, and the first female villain in Queen Hedrian, inspired by Marvel's Hela. Cool. This also is the first time we see a Makiyoko Soga, which most Western audiences know as Rita Repulsa.
Cool.
Denzai Man became the most popular Sentai series since Go Ranger.
And so, as you know, this individual here, as you can see in her former state,
yes,
that's Machiko Soga, and that she actually went on to become the Power Rangers Rita Repulsa. Pretty interesting.
She was such a good villain too.
Oh yeah, she was a great villain. But it's really interesting though, even from the get go in 1971, you can truly see kind of how. Just thanks to just some manga writing and some weightiness, if you will. It's really interesting to see how the whole thing started evolving, and especially season after season of the Sentai, we start to see some form of an evolution starting to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting. So here we go. The final follow-up to Marvel's partnership with a series based around animal themes called Sun Vulcan. And the Solar Squadron are based on three male heroes, and they never featured a female lead, but was the first Sentai show to have multiple combining giant robots. Just look at that guy.
Wow.
So Sun Vulcan was introduced with a hero. He was the first one actually introduced with a hero with a samurai sword as his preferred weapon of choice. Very interesting. So this would lead to the final series with Marvel and Stan Lee. Ultimately, Marvel wasn't able to secure a Sentai show in America on American television networks, so a new era began for toy entertainment, and a new series would debut called Dai Sentai Goggle 5. And so there we go. We're starting to get more refined now.
Yes.
So this is Goggle V or Goggle 5. This is the first time that we see the color combination of black, blue, red, yellow, and pink. Sounds familiar?
Right.
Sound familiar?
Yep.
So it's pretty interesting. And also, Goggle 5 also brought back the female member who battled the evil Death Dark villains rather than fighting the giant-sized versions of the monster that the team just defeated. A giant robot would be dispatched by Death Dark to the fallen monster, and so he could then pilot it. You heard me correct. Very interesting. So that's the first time we see a defeated monster go inside of a giant robot, and he could pilot it as a second chance to defeat. Very interesting. So the first time this scenario would ever be used in Sentai history. Other variations of the groups would follow would be, of course, the Dynamen. But it wasn't until Haim Soban took control. And Soban, basically, we should probably know that name because I'm just saying he's been around for a while. And if you don't know the name, then you might want to look up on your pop culture history because – let's just say he's been around quite a while.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm trying to load a little bit of imagery here for you guys so you guys can enjoy some of his amazing work that he's done throughout the years. So basically, he was born in Egypt. And there we go. Yeah, look at that.
There he is.
There's Mr. Saban. Yes. And so you wouldn't think this individual here would have such a creative control in pop culture. But just sit back and relax and wait. He was actually born in Egypt, and he was a troublemaker growing up, but he had a very strong work ethic. And he became part of a musical group called the Lions of Judah, which is very interesting. And then later he
those haircuts, though, you guys.
I know. Those haircuts are pretty dope, right? But can we just give it up for the Lions of Judah? It's a pretty awesome name, right?
That's a sweet name.
That is a sweet name.
Wow.
But anyway, moving along here. So he would also later then focus on becoming an entertainment manager and a producer. It was there that Saban would write and record intros for TV shows, including a theme song for the UFO robot, and that would be for Grandizer. And we have a picture of that. There we go. UFO robot.
Grandizer. Yes, I remember that. Oh, yes. Okay.
So there's some, and that was one of the really big popular cartoon shows that really took off in the 80s back in the day. But there's so many more here that he was a part of, and he especially wrote the music. He actually wrote the theme song music for some of these shows. And in 1983, Saban moved to Los Angeles, and with the help of his friend Shuki Levi, Saban went on to record theme songs for many well-known 80s cartoons, including, but not limited to, you ready for this? We have Kid Video. Anybody remember Kid Video?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Now Austin, this is like seriously.
Oh man.
This is seriously before your time, Austin. So.
Oh, absolutely. I've not seen that image forever.
Well, you got to think though. He wrote the theme songs for all of these, and it's interesting to note that some of these I didn't even realize he had done. And so let's go on to the next one here. Ulysses 31. Anybody remember that one? It's kind of a B movie.
Like Jesus.
All right, so we got Jace and the Wheeled Warriors. Anyone? Anyone? Bueller? Okay. Bueller? What about Mapletown? Anybody remember Mapletown?
I do remember Mapletown.
Oh my goodness! Wow,
Austin, did you catch some Mapletown growing up?
I've caught reruns, obviously.
What about Inspector Gadget?
That's my boy.
Now this one I actually remember, and a lot of people don't remember this one, but Mysteries of the Cities of Gold. Does anybody remember that one?
It seems familiar, but I don't really remember the premise of it.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Okay. So the next one up, coming up, we all should probably remember this one. Maybe Mask? Anybody?
Yep. Yes.
What about He-Man and the Power? Yeah.
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Of us. Yes, yes.
That's awesome.
And of course, he wrote She-Ra.
I am She-Ra.
Oh, cool. Wow. Yeah.
And also, last but not least, he's very talented. And Dino Saucers, ladies and gentlemen. Dino Saucers.
Yes. I don't remember that one. I don't really recall
that one either. Definitely Kid Video, Inspector Gadget, Mask. Mm-hmm. Mapletown, I remembered, although I can't admit to actually watching Mapletown. Masters of the Universe and She-Ra, I do remember those. Pretty awesome.
That is awesome, man. So on a trip to Japan in 1984, Haim was in a hotel room and saw on local TV a show called Bioman, a group of colored heroes with power bracelets and bioparticles, each unique to the varying warriors. Bioman featured two female rangers, okay, familiar, and villains who inhabit giant robots to face off against the hero team's Bioman mech robot. It also featured a robotic lead counterpart that would inspire Alpha. By 1986, Haim shot the pilot of Bioman geared towards an American audience and featured the evil Zadar as the supervillain. The show would never get picked up. No American networks would pick up the pilot of a Super Sentai series, but that never detoured Saban and his drive to bring to America this super team. So Haim never stopped composing theme songs for American television while in Japan. Super Sentai still continued to evolve with the foundings of things like Studio Ghibli, which is, they're my favorite, New Type Magazine, and the release of Super Mario Brothers. The landscape for anime, manga, and video games reached new heights, so Dengeki Sentai Changeman featured a new team with mythological creatures as their theme. So we're starting to pick up little subtle cues here, right, guys? Changeman became the second longest running series after Go Ranger. We also saw the debut of a White Ranger. Other variations would follow in the 80s with Supernova Flash, Hikari Sentai Maskman, Chaojinki Metaldar, and Kamen Rider Black, of course, a throwback to the old series.
Can anyone feel like this volcano about to erupt right now? I'm feeling like, you know, you see so the much smoke coming out, right, but the lava hasn't quite come. Yeah.
The buildup is real. Yeah, right. I just want to get to the Power Rangers. But marking the 11th season of Super Sentai series in 1989, we see something never attempted before. All of the previous Sentai teams from Battle Fever J on down joining the new team to give them the proper send-off to their season. This now, was done
me,
in a TV
Let me pause
episode.
You right there. Let me pause you yeah. right there because I wanted to show you this image because it's really cool. This has never been done before in history, and it's one of the – I'll just let the image speak for itself. Just check this out. Boom.
Oh, man. What a
– So they are all the histories.
It is a hero rainbow spectrum.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's all of them from Kamen Rider all the way through to modern day up to that point.
Now that's pretty, a whole lot of spandex.
That's a lot of history. Oh, it my is. Goodness. So this, what you just saw was done in a TV episode, not a movie. Kazuko Sentai Turbo Ranger would set the bar and focus on five high school teenagers. Sound familiar? The follow-up would be Chaojin Sentai Jetman, which presumably the last toy would produce. Jetman fueled the Sentai series. Most of Japan's top directors and producers were drafted for Jetman, and its success would lead to the Harbinger model for modern-day Power Rangers, and that is, all right, I'm going to try this, Kyoryu? Yeah. Sentai, is it Zyu Ranger? Correct? Ranger in 1992. So this was the last of the precursors before Power Rangers, correct?
That is
Power Rangers.
There is a 1992
Power Rangers.
That is Power Rangers.
Wow. Yeah, look at the suit, the checkered board suit.
I'm seeing the green gold thing going on. Yeah, it's awesome.
Thinking Tommy.
It's pretty awesome, right?
It's all over the place right there.
That is awesome.
All right. Well, it would be the Kyoryu Sentai Zyu Ranger that would introduce dinosaur-themed rangers and mechas, along with Maiko Soga returning as the evil witch, Bendora. We also see the individual mecha that looks like actual dinosaur each ranger represents, and combining to form one super mecha. So you have individual ones combining into a big one again. All right. So it was so popular that it actually received a DVD in America by Shout Factory. After 8 years of failed attempts, Haim met with Fox Network's Margaret Lash. Haim felt that the Zyu Rangers was a perfect catalyst and just on the cusp of Jurassic Park's worldwide success. In August 1993, the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers debuted on Fox Kids. It was a complete overnight hit in America. Christmas toys were flying off the shelves in 1993, and the ratings were exploding at number one consistently. Merchandise sales at one point reached billions, with a B.
Wow.
And shows with varying ethnic heroes, real life issues, dinosaur powers, and giant mecha robots would speak to the hearts and minds of young children worldwide. Stan Lee and Marvel ultimately helped mold the Sentai series into something better and gave the motivation needed to fuel over 45 years of Sentai pop culture phenomena.
Wow.
And that, my friends, is the backstory of the Power Rangers.
Does anybody else remember this?
Dino! Yes. It had the little kids say, Dink!
Yes, yes. Oh, my gosh. So we actually go from 1992. So we saw how the Super Sentai cultivated and formed and grew, and literally with the thumbprint of Marvel Comics and Stan Lee coming on board, escalated. Because at the time, they were struggling, trying to figure out this whole team thing. Then Marvel steps in and says, all right, you can use Spider-Man's likeness. It's okay. We have a contract. But in that, they actually create robots and mechanics that were used to form modern-day Power Rangers, especially with the Mechazord.
And that's just the birth story of the Power Rangers. The Power Rangers transformed themselves multiple times over their lifespan. They went to outer space and all kinds of other stuff. Mm. It's just crazy that it just continues to evolve. The longer that they're out, people just continue to change their stories and tweak them a little bit here and there.
And absolutely, you know, and I want to give a quick shout out to some friends hanging out with us over in the chat room. Wow. And Gabe Salcido actually said, my mind has been blown. And he's Stargate Pioneer says, I love 80s cartoons. And he
yes.
said,
we do too. We do
That's
too.
Right.
And yes, there is right. a Haim Sabam link to Kid Video and the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
So
oh my
cool.
gosh. So cool. And of course, in the American pop culture, we have seen many, many different forms of the Power Rangers.
How many iterations has there been? I mean, oh
honestly,
my gosh.
Honestly, I gotta admit,
ninja,
after,
and then they went like heavy ninja, and then they went yeah. like cyborg. And
there's at least seven yeah. versions,
and they're still going, aren't they?
And yeah. I gotta let me be clear: the Sentai of America is still totally different than the Sentai of Japan.
Yeah,
the Sentai of Japan. Guess what? Didn't stop in 1992. It's still going on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. There's That's too much insane. Money there to not.
So 45, for sure. over 45 years of Sentai legacy wrapped up. And it all goes back to one guy writing a comic with Cyborg 009 who had a vision for something that was a lot bigger than he was. And
yeah, and this is like a never give up story because, I mean, he went back like, what, three times, four yeah. times?
Well, Shitoro Ishinomori actually would be considered, now don't quote me on this because this is just a PopX statement. He's kind of like the Andy Warhol of American pop culture
mm-hmm.
for Japan.
Okay.
All yeah. right. Can you get that? And so yeah. he created these works of art. He created this manga that is literally huge yeah. still today. There's actually manga that some of his comics are actually drawn and painted on the subway systems in Tokyo and Japan.
Wow. Cool. I mean, that's cool.
You know, much like when we go to a store here, we see Super Mario Brothers or we see Zelda. It's kind of mm-hmm. like that for his figures over there, like Cyborg 009. Pretty wow. crazy stuff. So with all of that, we're actually going to go ahead and transition now to the movie part of the show. Austin, I'm going to let you do the honors and go first. And we'll go Lindsay and then I'll go last.
All right. So I get to go first. We're talking Power Rangers. It was a huge part of my childhood. So what we just talked about, going through all of this history and learning about the culture, it's just amazing to hear. Yes, it is a very cheesy show. I acknowledge that. We all acknowledge that. But for the time, it worked. And even going back and watching it today, you're like, oh, this would not work now. Well, guess what? They're still doing it. And they're keeping it as cheesy now as it was back then. So I went into this movie a little skeptical. I had liked some of the trailers more than I thought I would, but I for some reason in the back of my mind, I had a Fantastic Four feeling going into it. I was like, please don't just completely disappoint me and ruin like what they did to Fox. Please don't ruin the series for me. And so coming out of the movie, I was thoroughly impressed. I was surprised.
Okay.
My mind was kind of blown because of all the character development. That's something that I didn't expect going into a Power Rangers movie. And surprisingly enough, I actually enjoyed the first, we're doing spoilers, by the way. I enjoyed the first hour and 20 minutes of the movie even more than the end when they actually turned into the Power Rangers because it had a Breakfast Club feel to it where there are all these rebels, right? And they're these teenagers who can't find themselves and they come together as a unit and you get to explore each and every one of their characters. So wow. I don't know the specific names, so I'm going to acknowledge them. Red Ranger and Blue Ranger. Those two stole the show for me, especially Blue Ranger.
Blue Ranger.
He was awesome, man. And I love what he portrayed. Of course, he portrayed, and he even said in an interview, I portray a character with a mental illness and he was perfect. And I loved what he did and what he brought to that story. And the comedy in this movie, I think, although at times it may have been a little dark for young kids because it starts off with a joke that you probably don't want your kids to hear, but it worked for me and I really enjoyed it. So I got a lot out of that. And then the interaction between Blue Ranger and Red Ranger and then Red Ranger and Pink Ranger and just the way that they all responded to each other in times of crisis was great. I thought the decision to kill off Blue Ranger at one point in the movie was crazy. I did not think they were going to do it. I was blown away. And of course they brought him back, but just the fact that they took risks and they did things that you didn't expect them to do in the Power Rangers movie was cool. I did have some problems with the movie. I thought the ending was rushed. I thought they kind of, although I said I liked the beginning more, I still think they blew through the ending really quick. And Rita was very easy to take down. And I wanted to see more hand-to-hand combat instead of CGI flippy. But I get why they did it. It's the Power Rangers. And when the theme came on and they were in their Zords and they were rushing, I was jumping up and down.
Yeah, when you heard the song, Go, Go, Power Rangers.
Oh, man. I mean, I just thought.
I was like, it's on. Yes.
This is it. But yeah, I mean, this movie really did impress me. And I took my fiance, who has never seen a Power Rangers a day in her life. She actually liked the movie better than I did. Hmm. Not significantly more, but just a little bit better. And the fact that this movie can appeal to people who haven't watched Power Rangers, people who have, keep the cheesiness. They kept some of the cheesiness and that kind of worked. But then they went a little bit darker, which was unexpected. I thought it was really cool. The movie's not a masterpiece by any means. It's not crazy amazing, but I didn't walk out disappointed. And I walked out getting more than I expected to get and more than I ever got from any of the TV shows. It's not going to feel that nostalgia thing, you know, but it did fulfill the it was a good movie. So I was very impressed, and I enjoyed it. So
well, save your number review for the end, and we'll all go through it. Lindsay Badger, quickly, what was your thoughts on it?
Okay, there were things that I liked.
Oh no,
but I didn't love it. I did grow up with the Power Rangers, and I have good nostalgia of, you know, remembering watching it at a daycare, and the kids would fight over whose character they were going to be, you know, that kind of stuff. So I have good memories of the show and even the cheesy campiness that they kept a little bit of that, and I was glad that they did. I wanted more cheesy from Rita. She was almost a little too evil for me.
She was very dark.
She was a little darker than I expected. Also, Alpha was a little over the top on the corny. I mean, he's supposed to be corny, little robot, but I think he was just tweaked up a little. He needed to pull that back a little bit. Bryan Cranston did a great job playing his character, and he kind of explained the history, but that was really his only purpose in the whole movie. It was kind of telling the story of the Rangers, and then after that, it was just like, my whole goal is to get out of this thing and back into my body. And I'm like, no.
But no. Actually, he sacrificed himself.
He did, and I appreciated that. I appreciated that. Yeah. So that was cool. I wish that they would have morphed sooner. I wish we would have seen more action in the suits.
Yes.
A lot more action in the suits. I wanted to see a whole lot of actual Power Ranger go on. I get that the kids are rebels and they wanted to show that they were. The Yellow Ranger kind of was over the top on the rebellion for me. It was kind of stupid having them have to chase her half the movie. It was retarded. I liked the effects where they dove into the pool and then they, you know, that was kind of cool finding the secret lair or whatever. What else? The whole Killing Billy thing they could have taken that whole thing out of the movie and it would have been just fine for me. it was pointless. It was pointless for me. I loved the end scene with the fighting and the robots and them all coming together and that they were like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. And the guy trips, the robot trips over. And then as soon as he gets up, he like starts sprinting like they've been running this thing for like 25 minutes, you know, trying to figure through it all. So I was like, okay, you super rushed through this because there was no stumbling or anything after that first fall. And I was like, you can't just figure out a robot that fast if you've never driven it before.
That's true.
You can't do that. But I mean, they in the end, they won and it was a happy ending and they definitely set it up for a sequel. And I think that it'll be somewhat successful for the people that really are into the Power Rangers. But I think that being that extra dark factor, you're not going to catch the kids as much. So that's where you're going to lose your money.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
So, yeah. Joe, what are your thoughts?
Oh, well, let's see.
Wow, did I just tear that movie up? I just feel like I tore that movie up. There was no love. There was no love.
Wow. You didn't even ask for any kind of I won't say that. Oh, this is a good podcast. But for my thoughts, actually, I think the movie was pretty well done. I was really happy with the way that the team had to figure out that they were a team. They were a dynamic, that they had to work in unison. And I actually enjoyed the fact that Bryan Cranston had a lot more in this movie than just a voice. I enjoyed the fact that he actually dove into the back story of the Power Rangers being on Earth millions of years before that. And, of course, that is a spoiler alert, so I have to apologize. But I did enjoy the fact – I thought Bryan Cranston did an amazing job as voicing Zordon. And the scene where the Blue Ranger did die, I really thought it was really – it spoke volumes of Zordon that he had to overcome his own need to break out of the wall and be able to sacrifice himself to save one of his own team. So he knew he couldn't fight Rita himself, so he had to sacrifice himself to bring back the Blue Ranger so the team could, as a unit, fight and defeat Rita Repulsa. So I thought that was really good. And the whole dynamic that you kind of hit the nail on the head, Austin, about the whole Breakfast Club vibe, I felt really connected to Blue Ranger right from the get-go, because I'm kind of like that geeky, nerdy guy who was never understood in high school. And I immediately connected with him. And the dark comedy in this, I really didn't really think too much about it. I thought it was accurate. And you got to think about the people that's going in to see this movie. Of course, there's going to be kids and they're not going to understand some of the jokes. That's okay. Yeah. But there were some nuggets thrown in there for some of us who are in our mid 30s, going into our 40s, who grew up with the original Power Rangers in 93. And so I think there was definitely some nuggets dropped that we definitely appreciated, like the Go-Go Power Rangers and some of the corny jokes and stuff like that. But honestly, I at the end, I was really wanting to see more fighting in their suits. I wanted, because that was the whole basis of the original 93 show, was their martial arts and fighting
morphing
style.
Morphing into their suits was amazing, though.
Was good. I do like the fact, though, before they could morph, they had to figure out that they were a team. They had to discover their heart. And even though there was a couple of failed attempts at trying to morph, they finally figured it out that they had to both work as a dynamic team, as a power five, if you will. Goggle five, maybe. So I thought, honestly, though, the whole dynamic of the Power Rangers movie, though it's not perfect, definitely set the bar. And Austin, you and I were talking earlier before the show actually started that the second week into runs in the movie theater, this is one of the second quickest dropping cinematic films. It was like a 64% drop money-wise.
64% drop. It made $40 million first weekend and it made $16 million second weekend. So
was the budget like $200,000, something like that?
It was 100 million. It was 100 million and then almost double that. So about 175-200 million. They have to reach that just to break even.
I had one huge question.
Sure.
Why in God's name did they not perform CPR on Billy? As soon as they pulled him out of the
Madison
water,
wondered that
I'm
too.
Like, why are they not trying to resuscitate this boy? They're just staring at him.
Yeah, I agree.
And they're like, let's pick him up. I'm like, no, beat on his chest and breathe in his mouth.
There was actually a scene when they pick him up and they carry him all the way back from Angel Grove all the way to.
Yes.
Seriously, was that like 15 miles they had to carry him logistically? Mm-hmm.
No car.
And I actually laughed out loud. I actually caught myself.
And I think that's why I felt that scene was not necessary. There was so much ridiculous going on in that scene that I was like, this is not necessary at all.
That scene was very, very stupid. And can you hear this out here? Wow, we have Armageddon going on outside of my car. There's like police cars and everything. But closing, I'm going to have to give this a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, it's a good score, man. That's a great score. I guess I'll go ahead and give my score. Lindsay, I agreed with a lot of things that you said. I just, for me, I think the good outweighed the bad.
And I still have the good feels for the movie, yeah. But I just have a lot of complaints about it.
Oh, and I understand that. Like, but for a guy who's going into a movie expecting like a 3 or a 4 out of 10 and getting a lot more than I thought that I would get, I walked out like, oh my gosh, I'm going to give this movie such a high score. After thinking about it, obviously, I'm not going to. But my final score is a 6.8 out of 10. I mean, this is definitely above fresh. I like how it's at about a 50 on Rotten Tomatoes because some critics are actually digging it. And some critics are like, ah, but they're really not giving it terrible reviews. Average is from 5 to 7. So I think this movie did enough for me as a Power Rangers fan to want a sequel. And I think in the sequel, we're going to get a lot more action. And I think that's what this setup was for. Right. So I'm really excited about that.
Okay.
If it makes the money, we'll see.
That's right. And, you know, I went hem-hawed back and forth. I'm like, it's not a 7, but it's not, it's not a 6. It's not a 6.5. I don't even know. And so I'm going to stick my score between a 6.5 and a 6.7 because I can't really decide. It's somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. I even talked to my husband about it cause he watched it with me and I was like, it's not horrible.
Yeah.
It's not a C. It's definitely a D. It's just a D plus.
Wow.
Oh, a D plus. Okay.
Lindsay Badger is not holding back anything tonight.
She no, I'm not. This is unfiltered Badger.
Ladies, yes, unfiltered Badger tonight.
If I was to give this movie a letter rating, though, like the way that I rate movies, for me, a 6 is a fresh. So anything above, like Rotten Tomatoes, anything above a 6 for me is a good movie.
Okay. Right?
So me giving it a 6.8 for me is like around maybe a B minus, a C plus or a B minus. So that's, if I was to give it a letter grade, I would go
yeah, B minus for me as well. Yeah. Exactly. All right. So that is the end of our Super Sentai Power Rangers dive into history of 45 years of Super Sentai. But, and as always, if you see something exciting in the shelves or at your local comic book shop or in the theater, and around geek culture in general, let us know on social media with our hashtag YoPopX. And if you use a hashtag, we can use your post on a future show of PopX. So hashtag YoPopX.
Also, guys, we are part of an amazing network called the Gonna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GonnaGeek.com and check out some amazing podcasts from our home network.
And be sure to follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest, all at PopXCast. We love to hear from our listeners. Make sure you send us comments and suggestions to popxcast@gmail.com. And for all future and past shows, make sure to check us out on our official website, www.popxcast.com.
Mm-hmm. I am Austin Burke at the Burkinator on YouTube. I am Austin Burke. Just type in Austin Burke and find my movie reviews and reactions. And I once again apologize for my voice. It's getting worse as we went along.
It's pretty awesome, actually. It's pretty sultry. Right now would be a good time to record some voiceovers.
It is. And you can find me, Lindsay Badger, at LR Badger, all over the interwebs.
And I am Joe Burke, a.k.a. Ad Rotcav, on the internet. That's ROTCAV. And, of course, hats off to Team PopX, Lindsay Badger.
Indeed.
I'll give you hats off right here on the – and Mr. Austin Burke from joining us in Nether Regions Unknown in vast parts of Kentucky that are yet to be undiscovered by modern day society.
Nowhere.
Somewhere
yes.
in the Appalachia.
And we want to send out all of our love and support and safe travels to Mr. Mike Ippolito as he.
We missed you, Mike.
We missed you, man.
Big time.
Good journey. Good journey. So PopX is now, remember guys, PopX is now bi-weekly, so it won't be next week, but it will be the week after that. So visit popx.live for a full schedule and upcoming shows. Speaking of which, coming up on April the 16th, episode 54, we have a really cool one for you. It is The Incredible 50 Shades of the Incredible Hulk. And so that one's going to be really cool. And we're going to dive into the many forms.
Joe's going to get super geeky on that.
He
kind of likes the Hulk just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
There might even be visual representations in this show.
Yeah, there might be. Yeah, this is my USB.
Oh my gosh.
It's a credit card. But so you guys take care and we'll see you in 2 weeks right here on PopX Cast. And be sure to send in those comments and suggestions and emails and let us know what you think of the show. Comment below and leave us a note, okay? So from all of us here at PopX Cast, thanks for listening, thanks for downloading, and we'll see you on the next show.
Bye.
See ya.
From everyone at PopXcast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXcast. Get your geek on.